It's now exactly 30 minutes after 9. I think we're ready to start our meeting of the Subcommittee on Correctional Services. I want to welcome everybody in the meeting. Sia, I hope that I can see the Deputy Minister is here, so that's sorted. I did see the Commissioner seems to be having his team with him, which is good in one space. I've seen members who have joined the meeting, so I want to welcome all of you, members of the media and other organizations that are joining us for this meeting. I want us to start immediately, and I'm going to start with the Deputy Minister, who's going to lead the department. In setting the tone. But before the Deputy Minister starts, it's important that we explain that this subcommittee meeting has been planned and called for identified items that as subcommittee members were identified. We identified those items for presentation and discussion here today because we are concerned about the state of those programs and items. We selected items and asked the department to go and prepare to come back and present to us those items, which they did. And we also want to thank them because they were able to give us back the presentation in time, except one particular glitch, which I will explain later. But the main purpose, I want to say this up front, even before the Deputy Minister speaks and before the Commissioner comes in with his team. We have selected items and we said, these are the items we think there are key failures in these items. We have been with you since 2019, those who are new, but Honorable Self has been with this committee for longer than anybody here and understand the issues much better than many in terms of his institutional memory. But since 2019, we said we've been with you, we're worried about these issues. We've been listening to you, explaining yourself about these items that we are going to discuss here today. And so today, if we don't finish all of the next session, our focus and attitude is that you've been given a chance, you've been given an opportunity to explain why no progress is made on this, why no serious significant impact is done, so that when we rise either today or at the point of conclusion of these discussions, we are off the same page. Because that opportunity says to you, we're going to have to pull this together, and as a committee, we have got a very clear intention of not just continue talking about these items. We want at some point to come to a particular conclusion about them. And I did say to Sia, and I will explain it, that the three top items we're going to start with after the Deputy Minister spoke, we want you to prioritize the following items in the presentation. Your HR and critical skills and post issues, it's the first presentation. Your IIMS presentation in terms of the ICT. The action plan on the audit plans. Want to start with those three, and then we'll see if we have got enough time to deal with all others, but those are will be the, our top three items you will have to start presenting, because you did prepare everything else that we ask you to prepare. We might not have enough time for everything today, but we will. I hope you will be ready for that after the Deputy Minister. I will now invite the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services, Deputy Minister Patrick Olomisa. Dile Zindaba, thank you very much. We now ask you to ask.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services, in particular, the Subcommittee on Correctional Services, officials from the Department of Correctional Services, members of the media, good morning. Honorable Chairperson and members, thank you once again for the opportunity to engage with you on matters critical to ensuring correctional services delivers on its mandate in an efficient and effective manner. We have requested the department to engage you on measures we have put in place to ensure that critical and scarce skills are acquired, as well as to provide an indication of the status of consequence management in the department. Further to this, the committee has expressed concern on issues emanating from previous audit reports of the Auditor General on the department regarding various areas of financial accounting and management, as well as compliance with laws and regulations shortfalls, which, among others, have resulted in the department incurring irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. The department is here today to provide clarity on efforts that are being undertaken to implement action plans that are addressing prior audit findings, including interventions to improve financial and supply chain management controls, as well as consequences that have been expected in instances where internal controls, policies, and procedures have been flouted. Further to this, the committee has raised the matter of delays in the implementation of the Integrated Inmate Management System, called IMS, infrastructure projects and backlogs in the parole system. We will provide insight as to the status of all items which we believe will appraise the committee and possibly provide comfort as to efforts that are being employed in these challenging fiscal and health circumstances. On filling critical and scarce skills post, I need to give context and budget cuts. On the matter of acquiring critical and scarce skills, the prevailing situation is that the DCS is a labor-intensive organization operated on a 24-hour daily basis with a total field post-establishment of 38,829, of which 32,034 posts account for correctional center-based officials, whilst the remaining 6,695 are officials in categories of professional and support services. Of the 32,034 officials, a minimal 1,829 are responsible for social reintegration through community corrections. The remaining 30,205 are divided into two divisions, namely divisions A and B, in equal numbers of 15,102 officials. Each division to take care of custodial activities, that is internal and external security. This number is not enough to effectively manage custodial duties due to a multiplicity of reasons, amongst which are shift patterns, which contribute to a further reduction of available resources at any given time to provide security and other custodial intervention services. The National Treasury's cut, Mr. Chairperson, of the compensation of employees' budget by an amount of 895 million rand in October 2020 will continue throughout the medium-term expenditure framework period at a rate of 2.6, 3.5, and 4.7 billion rand respectively, and will inevitably have dire consequences on the future of the GCS. The projected reductions are tantamount to a reduction of posts, which is greater than the number of officials who ordinarily terminate services in any financial year. The department has on average lost 1,600 officials through termination of services due to deaths, resignations, retirement, dismissals, and transfers to other departments. The projected budget cuts have the implication of reducing more than 10,000 posts over the next 3 years. This could mean that the department will not have the budget to remunerate currently employed officials, whilst it continues to lose personnel through the various means of attrition I have just mentioned. The current situation is further aggravated by the COVID-19 pandemic, which forced the department to declare a moratorium on the filling of all posts during level 5 to level 3 of the national lockdown and allowing only 50% of employees during the subsequent levels to be rostered and to work alternative weeks with a view to prevent widespread infection of the staff complement. The rate of filling correctional center-based officer positions with entrants from outside the system is affected by the occupation-specific dispensation, which DCS is required to comply with in line with Resolution 2 of 2009 of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, GPSSPC, which requires correctional officers to undergo the Correction Science Learnership Program before being employed as coalface officials of the department. Consequently, when higher non-SMS posts in the security or community corrections functions become vacant, they cannot be filled by external candidates, except DCS officials who have undergone the former DCS basic training or the current correctional science learnership program. At the same time, the effect of the compensation of employees' budget cuts has negative implications for the filling of entry-level posts by learners who have completed the learnership program. Currently, we have 1,019 learners who completed their training in December 2020 and are waiting to be declared competent and certified by the Safety and Security Services Sector Education Training Authority, SASITA. However, due to the cuts in the current year's adjusted budget, we may be unable to offer them full-time employment as officials. Similarly, we have 925 learners who completed their training in March 2020 and have been on contracts which are due to expire at the end of this month. But the further cuts in the next financial year's compensation baseline, commencing in April, will not only hamper our ability to employ the learners, but our ability to recruit in general. The department has previously filled vacant entry-level posts with learnership students from both the DCS learnership program and those from the South African National Defense Force. However, this will be an impossibility going forward. Honorable Chairperson and members, I would like to articulate further around the perception of the department preferring to employ SANDF youth reservists over absorbing learners who have been trained in our learnership program. The facts are as follows. Learnership contracts are youth developmental program contracts. The learnership contract is in line with the GPSSEC Resolution 2 of 2009, of which clause 12.1 stipulates that learnership contracts must terminate once the contract has ended. The last learnership contract ended in December 2020. Notwithstanding the above, in the past, the learners were offered an employment contract at the end of the learnership contract. This practice was attributed to the fact that The department always had vacancies at the production level, which were budgeted for. Now, prior to 2020, it was envisaged that there was going to be a staff shortfall of 4,000. In addressing the projected shortage, the department took a decision to, through a memorandum of understanding with the SANDF, appoint 2,000 SANDF youth reservists. The other 2,000 posts were reserved for the absorption of learners upon completion of the learnership program. One batch in December 2020 and another one in March 2021. This decision of appointing youth reservists was based on the fact that they had already undergone military training and only needed shortened breathing training to meet appointment requirements in the DCS. This approach was seen as cost-effective whilst also creating employment for the youth. Organized labor was consulted regarding this approach, and they did not object to it, as they were equally concerned about staff shortages at production level. In October 2020, the adjusted estimates of national expenditure were announced, resulting in a cut to the COE budget of the department. From a position where there were funds available for the youth employment initiative, there was now a projected overspending on compensation of up to approximately 280 million rand. At this point, the department had employed 1,079 SANDF youth reservists and was awaiting the completion of 1,019 learners from the internal program. This sudden change to the DCS financial outlook created a situation where the department could not continue to employ the remaining reservists and qualifying learners. Now, on the status of vacancies. At the level of senior management service, SMS, the department has a total of 216 posts, of which 56 were vacant as of January 31, 2021. The majority of vacancies are at director and chief director levels, which make up 98%. A further look at these vacancies indicates that at director level, there are 41, which is 73% of vacancies at SMS level. This layer of senior management is closest to operations and is instrumental in ensuring implementation of policies and procedures. When it comes to medical professionals, the department has a total of 2,232 who are either permanent or on contract. Now, a total of 609 are on contract, which amounts to 27% of the contingent. These professionals consist of doctors, nurses, pharmacists, psychologists, and social workers, who are all key to offender rehabilitation and care. At a cursory level, the number would suggest that given an offender population of approximately 140,000 sentenced and unsentenced offenders, the ratio of medical professionals to offenders is 1 to 61. This is wholly inadequate. The envisaged budget cuts imply that contract workers will have to be terminated at the end of their tenure, reducing the current available resources by 27%, while the offender population is not envisaged to reduce at the same rate, and the department is struggling to deliver required services currently. The department has various occupation-specific dispensations, which include artisans, educationists, engineers, environmental officers, legal officers, religious practitioners, as well as the aforementioned medical practitioners. The total post establishment for these OSD posts is 3,332, of which 560 are vacant. Public Service Regulation 40B states that an executive authority must, before filling any vacancy, ensure that sufficient budgeted funds, including funds for the remaining period of the medium term expenditure framework, are available for filling posts. It will therefore be difficult to fill posts going into the outer year, as the budget cuts going forward will be even greater than experienced in the current financial year. Possibilities are that the department may not afford its current staff complement. Even if the budget was to absorb the impact of budget cuts with service termination posts, the projections are that posts to the value of 2.7 billion rand are by far more than posts that will be vacated through service termination. Further implications of budget cuts are the possibility of non-payment of incentives such as pay progression and performance bonuses, leading to a low morale. Two, slow achievement of employment equity targets, including youth and women and persons with disabilities to SMS posts. Three, the need to merge some functions and roles. Four, increase in litigation, labor unrest, and unhealthy labor relations. Five, heightened security risks, custodial and escort duties, inability to prevent or mitigate escapes and riots and or unrest. Six, inability to implement an ideal shift system, which will increase over time as preferred by the major majority union. Seven, challenges in achieving strategic outcomes and outputs in the strategic plan and annual performance plans of the department. And lastly, demoralization of employees as a result of anticipated increase in workload. Having considered all the matters, we still have to chart a way forward against these myriad challenges. The department has adopted a two-phased approach to manage the vacancy situation. The phase one is that of 2020-2021 financial year. We are in constant consultations with organized labor on the impact of a shrinking budget. We have declared a moratorium on the filling of all vacant posts, including those earmarked for SANDF reserves. We have prioritized the filling of mainly coal-faced posts, such as those under incarceration and community correction. We have stopped the payment of 100% overtime and additional standard days allowances that related to COVID-19 allowances, limit prescribed 30% of remuneration as opposed to the special allowances that were introduced during the lockdown. You have maintained a consistent approach in abolishing posts in consultation with branch heads and regional commissioners to identify posts to the value of the budget. We are honoring contractual obligations in terms of current warm bodies on the payroll. Where possible, we consider officials of the equivalent salary levels of pay of a vacant post to act therein. And lastly, branch heads and regional commissioners are facilitating change in reporting lines where line management posts are affected to ensure business continuity. And at phase two, which is for the period 2021-2022 financial year, we have established an education committee comprising the chief deputy commissioner, who is the chairperson, the deputy commissioner for branch, that is commissioner for human resources, deputy commissioners from each branch, and deputy regional commissioners from each region, whose main purpose will be to determine posts to be filled based on criticality and availability of funds. The committee is focusing on the trimming of head office and regional offices in line with the service delivery model through a redeployment process. We shall identify duplication of functions and posts, both permanent and contractual. We shall reassess the filling of posts which are occupied by employees who are retiring for purposes of the reprioritization of funding. We are considering not filling vacant posts occasioned by natural attrition, which include affected posts as a result of resignations and deaths. We shall not renew employment contracts upon expiry, except those recommended by the Adjudication Committee. We shall apply a post-establishment self-funding approach, considering revenues generated from our production workshops, farms and gardens, clubs and messes. We shall continue to intensify consultation with organized labor on the impact of the shrinking budget. And lastly, we shall continue filling posts from within the department. The unplanned turbulent onset of the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated the prevailing unstable and uncontrollable situation at the time and incrementally delayed the planned filling of posts in the department. Chairperson, honorable member, all that this means is that the budget cuts on compensation of employees have serious implications for the department in the current financial year and in the NTEF period. It requires urgent political intervention to prevent the delivery of correctional services being affected negatively and culminating in a crisis for the country going forward. I must once again emphasize that the work of the security cluster is labor intensive, and therefore the mechanical reduction of its budget and personnel will invariably weaken its capacity and capability to reassert the authority of the state, to protect the territorial integrity of South Africa, and to ensure that all South Africans feel and are safe. Now, coming to the interventions that were required to report upon. Audit action plans, irregular expenditure and consequence management. Chairperson, this brings me to matters relating to our efforts in addressing identified audit findings that express themselves in issues of non-compliance, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I will also provide insight into consequence management initiatives undertaken by the department. First of all, I would like to indicate that DCS improved over the past financial year in an attempt to address audit findings. In 2018-2019 financial year, the Auditor General qualified the department's annual financial statements on irregular expenditure and commitments on goods and services. However, in the 2029-2020 financial year, the department was only qualified on irregular expenditure. Though a small move, it shows that the department's efforts are bearing fruit. The department is acutely concerned with issues raised by the Portfolio Committee and the AG reports for 2018-2019 and 2019-2020 financial years, with specific reference to negative audit outcomes and recurring audit qualification on irregular expenditure with findings on bad basis. To resolve these areas, the department has developed a detailed audit action plan, with specific timeframes for each of the findings raised in those financial years. And this has led to 76% of the findings relating to the 2018-2019 financial year being addressed. There are various activities which are being implemented to ensure that the remaining 24% are adequately resolved to obviate the repeat findings by the Auditor General. The following measures have been instituted to address irregular expenditure and findings on the completeness of bad basis reported. First of all, the review of the accommodation determination system and the associated policy to ensure reliability of information generated on cell measurements. There's a review of all supply chain management payments to ensure completeness and full disclosure of irregular expenditure on the annual financial statement. Additionally, the department has reviewed its finance and supply chain management manuals to ensure controls where they were found to be inadequate and ineffective. This is also considered to assist in eliminating irregular expenditure. Now, the following measures or steps, amongst others, have also been implemented to prevent reoccurrence of irregular expenditure. Reviewing of bids prior to awards, bids with a monetary threshold below 10 million rand are reviewed by director of procurement, and bids above 20 million rand are reviewed by internal audit to ensure all compliance requirements are met. Mandatory briefing sessions are held with bidders to ensure that their submissions are aligned to the requirements of the department. Standardization of special conditions of contracts for perishable and non-perishable food items to further eliminate misinterpretation of the requirements is done. Centralized signing of contracts exceeding 3 million rand as a preventative control measure is done. Contract monitoring to ensure timely advertisement of renewal for contracts or bids. Late advertising of bids has led to the department having to buy more especially perishable goods out of contract, which has resulted in irregular expenditure, which requires condonation from National Treasury. In addressing existing cases of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the department has put a team in place to investigate and finalize cases and institute disciplinary measures where appropriate. To date, officials linked to 136 transactions of irregular expenditure have been disciplined with varying outcomes, such as final return warning, suspension without salary, notwithstanding the above. The department is in the process of reviewing other cases where officials have contravened supply chain management prescriptions. Transgressions of policies, procedures, and the departmental code of conduct undermine efforts to implement the mandate of the department, which includes safe custody of inmates to serve their sentences until lawfully released. It is therefore crucial that consequence management should be meted out at all times as a deterrent and in the form of sanction. Now, 971 disciplinary cases were reported for the third quarter of 2020-2021. Out of the 971 disciplinary cases, 722 were finalized and 249 are in progress. All disciplinary hearings were chaired by DCS officials and no disciplinary hearings were chaired by external persons during the reporting period. The department has observed an increase in disciplinary hearings due to progressive discipline applied as a result of non-adherence to measures stipulated in the department's risk-adjusted strategy to combat COVID-19. There has also been an increase in cases of absentees. The prevailing misconduct cases are for being absent from duty without prior permission or authorization. The other prevailing cases are assault cases. 17 cases were reported in KwaZulu-Natal at Kokstad, there being 8, and Mpangeni being 9 management areas. There is a decrease in the number of pending disciplinary cases from 275 reported in the second quarter to 249 reported in the third quarter. Suspensions reported for the third quarter of 2020-2021 are 112. Out of the 112 suspensions, 72 were lifted due to either final decisions being reached or disciplinary processes having commenced. 40 are still in the process of being investigated. There is a marked decrease in suspensions from 64 pending suspensions in the second quarter to 40 pending suspensions in the third quarter. About 64.3% of suspensions were resolved in the third quarter. The total cost of suspensions reported during the third quarter is 3.5 million rand, which is the remuneration cost for suspended employees. This figure is impacted by MSS members who are on suspension. Historically, Suspensions were high due to officials using them as a means of punishment or for matters that did not require suspension. The department has since reduced such incidents by ensuring suspensions are instituted to investigate serious offenses, thereby reducing the number of human resources that are unavailable for service. DCS endeavors to ensure consistent consequence management, despite some of the, DCS endeavors to ensure consistent consequence management, despite some of the transgressing officials claiming to be unaware of the results of their undesirable behavior. There are continuous efforts to create awareness amongst members. Even though the hard lockdown in the latter part, in the earlier part of the previous financial year and subsequent management results and subsequent levels resulted in restrictions around traveling and requirements for social distancing, amongst other limitations. Consistent and prompt consequence management will eventually bring about the desired effect and ensure a compliant department. On the integrated inmate management system. Now, for justice to be and to be seen to be done, it is critical to have a criminal justice system that is efficient and effective. In order to achieve this, modernization and mechanization are key. The Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster has recognized the need for this transformation, and as such, the cluster is in the process of developing the integrated justice system that will share information across the cluster to enable efficiencies to be achieved. In the case of DCS, we are currently reliant on outdated legacy systems that are not integrated, and as such, we are unable to have a common comprehensive view of an inmate or offender and their life cycle within the correction system, which fragments the interventions developed and delivered to the inmate or offender. The Integrated Inmate Management System project is aimed at implementing a more reliable centralized inmate database and an agile inmate management environment solution for the use and benefit of the department. The IMS seeks to support the goal of achieving a single view of the offender through the single capture of inmate and offender information, what we might call one-stop shop for inmates, parolees, probationers, and offenders. And offender registration, and to enable officials to perform full profiling and integration of the details of the person's rehabilitation, healthcare, psychosocial information, as well as other interventions through the use of biometric identification technology. A contract was awarded for the development and implementation of IMS to a company called Integratron Integrated Solutions Pty Limited in November 2016, with the formal project commencing in January 2016, with an expected duration of 3 years, that is 36 months, ending on 11 January 2019. It was extended for a further 12 months to 11 January 2020 at no additional cost to the department. The three-year contract projected cost was 378 million rand, and a total of 259 million rand was paid for, that is 58%. A mandatory development framework acquisition cost 142.6 million rand. IMS development consulting fees cost 116.5 million rand. The development framework, consisting of software and licenses, which form the backbone of the system, are a capital asset of the department and will be utilized as the system is rolled out to various sites. 126.8 million rand was not paid to the service provider as they did not fulfill all the requirements for developing the system. The service provider declared a dispute, which DCS opposed. The appointment of an arbitrator by the Office of the State Attorney was underway in March 2020 when the hard lockdown halted the process. Parties now await the appointment of the arbitrator. Though the project has had its fair share of challenges, it has successfully delivered the unsentenced portion, that is, remand detention module. At the end of March 2020, this module had been rolled out to 9 sites, at which point, unfortunately, the national state of disaster was proclaimed, halting the rollout process. When the country moved to adjusted level, alert level 3 in August 2020, the department regrouped its efforts and commenced the IMS rollout to 11 sites by end of quarter 2, increasing to 17 sites at the end of quarter 3. To date, there are 21 sites where IMS has been rolled out. Limited technical capacity programming in the department has resulted in the slow implementation of the remand detention module and finalization of the remaining modules of incarceration and community correction portions of the project. The development and integration of other common modules, such as health, pharmacy, and information exchange, continued in collaboration with the integrated justice system. However, capacity that was available from the IJS system was discontinued due to their contract expiring. The department has developed a core sourcing strategy to have extra capacity to finalize the development of the remaining modules of IMS and roll out of the completed modules. This capacity includes professionals who can only be appointed as consultants because of their rare and costly skills. It is common cause that modernization and automation of the justice system is urgent, and IMS will allow DCS to interface with the integrated justice system to better execute the incarceration, rehabilitation, and reintegration of inmates. On infrastructure projects, Chairperson and honorable members, as part of the process of modernizing and transitioning from prisons to a correctional system, it is imperative that infrastructure and buildings support the service delivery environment. The development of new and maintenance of existing infrastructure of the department are encompassed in the Master Infrastructure Plan. Since the dawn of democracy in 1994, South Africa has taken many positive steps in transforming infrastructure, and this aspect is particularly evident in the transformation of prisons into centers of rehabilitation. Even though the Department of Correctional Services has made good strides in changing prisons into human rights-based rehabilitation centers, a lot of work still lies ahead to steer the justice and correctional services portfolio in the direction of building a safer and secure South Africa. The property portfolio of the department consists of 243 correctional facilities and 218 community corrections offices, office accommodation, living quarters, agricultural facilities, recreational facilities, and production workshops, a summary of which has been provided to the portfolio committee on slides 5 to 8 and 17 to 18 of the circulated presentation. The poor condition of facilities impacts on all aspects of rehabilitation and correctional activities, and therefore hampers effective corrections in South Africa. Only 15 out of the 243 centers conform to the requirements of a new generation design. A brief comparison of old versus new generation design facilities could be explained as follows. Mr. Chairperson, I wish to save time and not go through this as members, I'm sure, are in a position to see what is contained in so far as what it means well, a conventional prison and a new generation facility.
Yeah.
Of the judge, I beg your pardon, Chairperson, you allow me?
Yeah.
Thank you.
We agree with you.
Thank you. Of the total population of correctional centers, 65% are in a poor to fair condition, while 35% are in a fair to good state. During the fifth and current administration, the department has finalized construction of various new generation correctional centers, such as Ceres, Matatiele, Van Reinsdorp, Standerton, Escort, Pretoria CIMEC, and Tzaneen, providing a combined 3,150 bed spaces. Further to this, various repair and upgrade projects were finalized, such as Glencore and Mamako. With construction already in progress at the Mthonjeni Youth Center, Parade, and Zanzibar Magma, the department is not only concentrating on the construction of new facilities, but also focuses on the repair and upgrade of outdated infrastructure. In line with the department's master infrastructure plan, the construction of new correctional centers at Bergersdorp and Rustenburg are scheduled to enter construction phases during the 2021-2022 financial year. Although the department's master infrastructure plan mainly focuses on transforming infrastructure from facilities of imprisonment to facilities of rehabilitation, the plan further emphasizes infrastructure upgrades and maintenance. Part of the maintenance program is to utilize own resources and offender labor. Primary purpose of providing offenders the opportunity to perform labor is to contribute towards fostering habits of industry, minimizing idleness, encouraging positive participation in rehabilitation programs, empowering offenders with work skills to break the chain of reoffending, and self-sufficiency after placement into communities. The DCS is enhancing utilization of inmate labor on various small maintenance projects as follows. During the 2017-2018, 2018-2019, 2019-2020, 2020-2021 financial year, the department has engaged various own resources projects. Offender labor will be utilized during the period 2021-2020 to concentrate on the refurbishment of kitchens, laundries, and construction of minor structures such as entrance gates and pharmacies. Strategies to transform and construct infrastructure are going to be budget constraints which impact implementation and completion of the building program. The capital works budget has undergone several cuts during the past three financial years, resulting in a reduction of 40% from 799.7 million rand to 469.5 million rand in the 2021-2022 financial year. The parole system. Last item the committee has requested the department to deal with is around delays in the parole process. On backlogs, the Tolo committee has been concerned with the reasons given for the accumulation of backlogs, and more importantly, what is being done to address such. The common cause is the quality of case management information of an offender submitted to parole board. Amongst the matters affecting the quality of information are outstanding professional reports from social workers and psychologists, among others. Two, outstanding or incomplete police documentation, such as SAP 22 and SAP 69, which assist the assessment in the assessment process upon admission of an inmate to DCS, as well as with regard to restorative justice processes. Thirdly, delays in the confirmation of residential addresses for offenders who are due to be released on parole. Fourthly, identification and participation of victims in restorative justice programs. And lastly, special remission of sentences in 2020 and special parole dispensation of 2021, placing additional pressures on the normal workload of officials. It became evident, Chairperson, that case management administration requires a review in order to introduce efficiencies and improve quality to prevent and reduce backlogs. In 2019, the department engaged case management committees in all regions to rectify the situation. There have been some positive outcomes from this process in terms of improving administration, and these include a process of reviewing policies and standard operating procedures, so-called B order, was initiated and is almost at completion stage. Guidelines on the packaging of inmate files have been distributed and are being implemented. Guidelines on victim participation in parole board sittings are being implemented, and correctional centers appointed dedicated officers to track outstanding documents through no dull persons at various courts. Multilateral meetings are continuously held between DCS, justice, and SEP leadership to unblock challenges, what we call case flow management meetings. Though these interventions have alleviated the situation, the insufficient number of social workers and psychologists to cope with the number of offenders due to appear before parole boards and or the National Council of Correctional Services is one of the key challenges faced by the department. The department service delivery model and results of a recently completed business process mapping exercise point to the need for a revised microstructure for the department, which will better articulate the requisite staffing norms for all professional services based on imperatives of the offender population. This also requires an increasing number of government and society-wide interventions to mobilize and leverage available professional resources to improve the impact of corrections. To mitigate against the current backlog, a National Life Fund task team was established as a special project to produce the required psychological assessment report. The process involves identifying a group of 10 or more psychologists nationally to be deployed to specific regions over 5 days to conduct bulk assessments. They assess offenders over a 4-day period, after which reports are submitted on the 5th day. The appointment of parole board is a very curious in here. There are currently 156 posts for chairpersons, vice chairpersons, and community corrections in DCS. 110 filled and 26 are vacant. Regarding filling 26 vacancies, the breakdown is as follows. Extension of contracts, appointments, and routes for approval, 10. Posts to be advertised in the next round are 16. Terms of contracts. This is why I find it curious, chairperson, and maybe you'll give us guidance here. The CSPB chairpersons and vice chairpersons were previously contracted for 5 years, whereas the current contracts are only for 3 years. I understand this is the situation we found in place, the change from 5-year period to 3-year period. Now, on leave entitlement, clause 8 of the current contract states that the chairpersons and vice chairpersons shall not be entitled to any form of leave as provided for in Chapter 3 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act 75 of 1997. The chairpersons and vice chairpersons don't qualify for any form of leave, be it annual, sick, or family responsibility leave. Now, we've had, together with Vicks, several meetings with the chairpersons and vice chairpersons of the parole board. And they point out the glaring injustice that emanates for these kinds of contracts. And in our understanding, the chairperson, the minister, is the person entitled to change these conditions of employment for these individuals. And we are awaiting, as the ministry, a report from the National Commissioner as to what has been done in order to ensure that this anomaly is rectified. That is, these people are employed in the way they were employed before, with having contracts of 5 years instead of the 3-year contract, which takes away the right to taking leave, leaving sick leave, and so on. Now, on remuneration, according to this arrangement, chairpersons and vice chairpersons' payments are on pro rata amount for the period worked, which is 8 hours a day, Monday to Friday, excluding weekends and holidays, subject to the claim submitted for the month. Working hours and days, clause 9 of the contract indicates that no member of the parole board shall work on and holidays. Now, obviously, these conditions of employment are hampering the work of the parole system, and as such, impacting negatively on our attempts to deal with overcrowding. So we await, therefore, from the National Commissioner to give us a report urgently as to what it is that government, the department is doing, as I say, to rectify this anomaly. Of course, the question of the budget cuts is likely to be one of the sticking points in the matter, but nonetheless, Chairperson, we still expect the National Commissioner to give the Minister and I a report on this matter. Managing the backlog of lifers and determinate sentence offenders. The current status in the backlog of offenders serving life and determinate sentences affected by the Van Vuren, Van Wyk and PASA judgment cases is as follows. On Van Vuren, all 369 lifers benefiting from the Van Vuren judgment have been considered by parole boards and the minister. 11 lifers have served longer than their further profile date. Submission of their further profile is set for not later than 30 April this year. Van Wyk, 2,848 of the 2,856 Van Wyk lifers have been considered by parole boards and submitted to the minister for his final decision. 322 profile reports that have served beyond their further profile date are scheduled for submission on or before 31 August 2021. On the partial cases, LIFAN. Since the judgment in May 2019 of the due 1,450, a total of 660 LIFANs have been considered by parole board. Target date for submission of the remaining 790 profile reports of partial LIFANs at head office is on or before 31 August 2021. On the determinate cases under sentences under the partial judgment, since the judgment in May 2019, 396 out of 489 of the due determinate cases have been considered by parole board. Submission of 69 profiles of due determinate cases for consideration by parole board is scheduled for 30 April 2021. Progress on the further profile and partial files are monitored weekly. Calculation of parole eligibility credits. It is important to indicate that credits are allocated to offenders sentenced before 1 October 2004 and offenders sentenced on or after 1 October 2004 for offenses committed before 1 October 2004. Credits are allocated in terms of Section 22A of the Correctional Services Act 1959 and or 136(2) of the Correctional Services Act 1998. Section 136(2) provides the following. When considering the release and placement of a sentence offender who is serving a determinate sentence of incarceration as contemplated in subsection 1. Such sentence offender must be allocated the maximum number of credits in terms of section 22A of the Correctional Services Act 1959. Allocation of credits in accordance with the minimum detention period applicable to offenders serving determinate and life sentences, including those offenders benefiting from the court pre-court judgment is provided for in section 654A of the 1959 Act. Details are provided in the presentation shared with members of the portfolio committee. The calculation is a system-generated and verified technical process. On the status on review of the parole system, the position paper on the review of the parole system has been forwarded to the current National Council of Correctional Services, which is chaired by Judge Siraj Desai, for consideration to advise and make recommendations to Minister Lamola. Due administrative processes will commence upon receipt of recommendations from the NCCS to the minister. Now, in conclusion, which I expect members to be hoping for. Honorable Chairperson and members, the department continuously introspects on areas where service delivery is being hampered and is consistently contemplating, implementing, and reviewing remedial and corrective measures to ensure optimal delivery in a skilled, health, and financially constrained environment. I wish once again to thank the committee for this opportunity to engage, and we eagerly anticipate your valuable insights and guidance. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. I deliberately gave you enough time. You have taken something close to an hour, just a few minutes, because your presentation straddles and cuts across many of the other presentations. You have given a helicopter view of many issues. So I deliberately did that because it assists in that regard, and therefore would ask the commissioner and his team, perhaps not to repeat the things that you explained, but to emphasize and elaborate on areas where you did not go into details, which becomes important. And I might not be given time, because I think if we can go through just those three presentations we highlighted, and after that, then the members come in and we might take each of those presentations and focus on each. But for now, I would want, if you agree, members, that we quickly ask the commission and the team to just quickly go through those other three presentations, although a lot has been covered already by the Deputy Minister, but I think it's fair that, because I was tempted to say at the end of the Deputy Minister's presentation, you will go straight into questions. But maybe before we do that, I think let's allow the National Commissioner and his team to take us through those without repeating in every detail of what the Deputy Minister has said. Commissioner Fraser and your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, okay. Yeah, you can fix your speakers so that they come closer to you. I don't know how you speak closer to your...
Can you hear me better now, Chair?
Okay.
Can you hear me now, Chair?
That's better.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Chair, if we have to talk, it would be we'd be repeating some of the things that the Deputy Minister said. So I'd seek your indulgence, and maybe we should just field the questions of the honorable members. And respond there to Chair, if you allow.
All right. No, I have no problem with that. I was tempted to do that. And maybe just before I invite members for their questions on this outline presentation, if you could just explain to us, National Commissioner, on the other presentation of the audit, the progress of the action plan. You have sent us a presentation before, and that presentation got replaced later on. And when it got replaced, it was substantively different from the initial one. The first one that you gave us was more substantive. And then you replaced it with almost like a high-level one. We're reading from the substantive one. So is there a reason, perhaps, that you can just explain to us before I invite members to engage with the discussion?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to get the DC, ICC. internal controls to indicate that. Thank you, Chair. My name is Abel Motau, Deputy Commissioner Internal Control Compliance. Chair, I'll actually try to answer that, even though I don't actually understand the reasons behind that. But what I need to explain, Chair, is that we had a presentation before. If you look at the first presentation, it was talking at a higher level on what has been achieved by the audit outcomes. It was speaking more to the quarter two progress in relation to the audit action plans. But when we submit a revised submission, we were talking more to quarter three, and we were trying to be as specific and as detailed as possible. So that, I think that was the reason for such. I don't think there was any discrepancies in terms of the submission. It could have been just a misunderstanding, Chair, to clarify that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We might come back to you and assist you and point to the areas, but thank you for that first response. Honorable members, can I now invite, I see the hands of members who are ready to engage with this report. Honorable Jackie Mufukeng will start, to be followed by Honorable James Sao. Honorable Mufukeng.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, I think I will have just two questions. One will be on the integrated inmate management system. I got the explanation very well, and I think DM, you actually covered a lot. And you tried to explain on the issue of IMSS and also the company that was contracted. But I don't get anywhere where you say that the department has tried to get the skills transfer. If I can be clarified on that. And also something that worries me into the whole thing is that the amount is said to be, you know, about 120 million has not been paid to the service provider. And now you look at what is actually happening, that is a court matter. What is happening here, we should understand, because you said the 12 months that was remaining, it was not to be paid for. But then contradiction is that the 120 is a balance. And now suddenly there's also now the issue that of arbitration and processes and all that. Maybe the clarity on that will assist me to understand. The other question will be on the issue of, and I think it's what happened in the, I saw it in the legacy report, that the committee in 2017 visited Kosimampuru Correctional Center. And upon checking on the inmate service, of the booking inmate service, then the system also took too long to read fingerprints. And now I want to know that all those technical hedges that are there, or technical challenges that have been, are they resolved? That is what I can check on. And then the last one is on the issue of the SMS, senior management. There are so many things that has been said here, that you have 56 posts of vacancies, and then you still have challenges of female and youth in there. And you are also mentioning that the slow sort of a achievement of employment on equity targets, and then increase in litigation, labor unrest, and unhealthy labor relations, inability to prevent or mitigate escape and prisoners, prisoner riots, inability to implement ideal shift system, and also you indicated that due to lack of workload, you anticipate the increase in fatigue. If the situation is like this, can we be told what is it that you are doing? I don't get the sense that your scenario planning was actually something that you considered. And I really want to know, because here we are not going anywhere. And I want to appreciate DM for being honest with some of the things that are very frustrating. And the last one, it will be the issue of parole system. But it's true that I would really want to hear from the commissioner about the bedlock that is there. How do you rectify the situation, noting that there's a process of a justice? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mufuke. Commissioner, can you get a return of service immediately on the few issues raised by Honorable Member Mufuke before I proceed to you? I don't want any leakage answers.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Just on the prior question you posed, the first question you posed, I have just been advised that the two reports, one report had come from the audit committee and the other report had come from the department. So it's just to clarify why the distinction, Chair. So I just wanted to provide that, and I've been reliably informed that it was the audit committee's report that you may be referring to.
So which one was retrieved? Was it the department's one that was retrieved or the audit committee one? Because there was a replacement.
Let me get further detail on the replacement of the report.
I'm still coming back on it. You better be ready.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to get our CDC Jito to deal with the first question, and then CDC HR to deal with the latter. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members, and to our Deputy Minister. I will respond on the issues of IMS. I think the first question was about skills transfer. In terms of skills transfer, there was skills transfer that was done to the department in terms of the rollout and the maintenance and support of the system. So if there are errors or if there are challenges on the system as we are rolling out, there are our own officials who fix the errors. So what has not happened is to finalize the development of the modules that were mentioned by the Deputy Minister, which is incarceration and corrections, the health and pharmacy, and the community corrections. So in terms of developing the system, because it's a very high skilled requirement for developing the system, we don't even have resources in terms of skills transfer on the maintenance and support of the coding that has been completed was done. The arbitration process, yes, the arbitration process, we first had our own internal process where the service provider was claiming that they have completed the modules that are just specified. So because their payments were per deliverable, so they are claiming that they have delivered. We said that if the module is not functioning, is not delivered. So the process that we are in is to claim that 120 million that is outstanding of the unfinished or currently not functioning modules of the IMS. In terms of the extension, the reason why we said at no cost, it implies that they are not increasing the contract cost. As we said, the original contract cost was 378 million, it just increased by when we were doing the VAT increase of the 15% to 380 million. So for the extension period, we were not extending that contract. So there's no variance in the extension period in terms of the contract. amount. In 2017, on the system itself, of which the members again has mentioned that they are out biometric and system, those were fixed. The biometric solutions right now, the licenses that we have, we own the licenses and we have fixed. So the issue was more of a technical matter that has been fixed. And as we are experiencing different challenges, as I said, our members are able to fix the problems that are there within the system itself. I think I covered all the questions on IMS. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members, Deputy Minister, Commissioner, and the Executive. With regard to the questions that were posed by Honorable Mofokeng, I need to indicate, Chair, that the Deputy Minister indicated in his speaking notes that these are the possible consequences of the budget cut on the department. And there are interventions that we have in place in order to address them, which he divided into two phases. For an example, the first phase, which is mainly on the short-term interventions, and the second phase, which will be from the medium to the long-term intervention. Now, to start with the one on the short-term intervention, Chairperson, regarding the members who, as a result of not getting the pay progression and performance bonuses, will experience low morale. We've got employee assistant practitioners in all correctional centers who will be dealing with them in order to address that morale that they will be experiencing. Furthermore, regarding the increase in litigations, labor unrest, as well as unhealthy labor relations, there in our short-term intervention, we have indicated that we are in constant consultation with organized labor on the impact of this shrinking budget. So what it means, Chairperson, is that we are currently engaging with labor because we are aware about these implications on the staff. And as a result, we could not just continue without taking them on board. So they are fully aware about what is currently happening in the department. Another thing that we have indicated as a possibility that might happen as a result of this, Chairperson, is the fact that we might be not achieving employment equity targets quicker than we anticipated, especially in terms of the youth and women. And what we have said as one of our interventions, Chairperson, is that we shall reassess the filling of posts which are occupied by employees who are retiring for the purposes of reprioritizing them in order to fill them. So when we fill these posts, we will be filling them guided by our employment equity plan in order to ensure that we are still in line in terms of achieving this particular important target. Thank you very much. Okay, regarding the shift system, Chairperson, we are currently also engaged with labor. We have met labor on multiple times, the last of which was this Tuesday, where we are currently looking at the different options. Because, for an example, the option that they are choosing is the one that has a serious financial implication because it has an overtime in it. And because of their awareness in terms of this cut that the department is currently experiencing from now up until the next 3 years, they are agreeing with us in principle that we need to look at an option that will be cost free to the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could respond to the matter on parole, I can indicate to Honourable Mofokeng that we have put a plan in place to deal with the backlog on parole, and I think the Deputy Minister reflected on the timeframes that we've attached to that. We are also, we've also looked at the quality of the profiles that is submitted both to the parole board as well as to the NCCS, and we've ensured that we hold our CDCs responsible to ensure that the quality matches the expected output. On the issue that the Deputy Minister raised around the chairpersons and vice chairpersons and the anomaly with regard to the contract, we are in the process, Chair, having regard that with the budget constraints that we have been confronted with, we have sought a legal opinion from the state law advisor, and we have been given undertaking that that opinion will be provided with us in the next week. We will then make a submission to the executive in how do we regularize what really on the, at the face of it is irregular in terms of our relationship with the board. I'm hoping that that has dealt with the matters by the Honourable Member. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner and team. I now recognize Honourable James Bell.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the team. My first question would concern the integrated inmate management system, because this current iteration of it is started in 2018, and it has now gone to arbitration and various other things. But actually, as my recollection goes, there is a longer history in this, and various contractors have been brought in at various previous times to try and bring about an integrated inmate management system or a variation of it. What has happened to that particular technology and those particular schemes in the past? Have they just been abandoned? Have they been integrated into the new system? What is the status of that? The second question that I'd like to ask concerns the budget cuts on personnel. And the Deputy Minister gave an explanation about how the department planned to mitigate the reduction in expenditure. But I wondered whether any consideration had been given to thinking far more creatively around transferring people within the department so as to do things differently. Now, one of the things that I can think of, for example, was if there was a greater emphasis on community corrections, community service, that sort of sentence, a non-custodial sentence, one could then move personnel from incarceration to community corrections and effect a far more cheap version or far cheaper system. The other thing concerns, but really concerns me, and it goes to slide, I think it's slide 10 of the critical skills presentation, and that concerns the number of artisans and educationalists in the department, because if it is so that the objective of the correctional service system is to rehabilitate and reskill people and to reintegrate people, then one would require, I would have thought, a greater emphasis on education and training and skilling. And in that respect, I refer to the presentation on facilities. And in fact, throughout the entire correctional services system, there's only 48 production workshops of various sorts and 122 farms. It seems to me that there's an emphasis on incarceration and not enough emphasis on rehabilitation. And the personnel that is allocated reflects that. And I just wondered whether the department had given any thought in this crisis caused by the pandemic about how they were thinking about restructuring the department in order to achieve rather more fundamental goals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sal. Can I come back to you, Commissioner, for the response to those critical pointed questions that have been raised by Honourable James Sal?
Thank you, Chair. I will get the CDC Jito to respond first. Thereafter, I'll get CDC HR and then CDC incarceration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, the previous technologies that were there, I would say it's prior 2012, it was a tripartite agreement between the department, CETA, and a dimension data, of which its focus was mainly on what they called remand detention offender management system, RDOMS. So with that previous engagement during the period up to 2014, we were trying to resuscitate the project and look at the technology that was used, and it was only focused mainly on the remand detention portion of the process. And unfortunately with that, it also ended up in court, where the dimension data took us to court with CETA. We went through the whole process, but they wanted to withdraw the case. We said we are not withdrawing the case. We also want to recover our what we paid them through CETA, and also recover the money that we paid CETA on the server. In terms of technology, the technology implementation portion of technology was mainly the database. So that database is the same database we are using during this process of IMS, as that database as well is a database that we own as a department. So the only technology coming from there utilized currently is the database, and the process is still now on, still in court with regards to us recovering the monies that we have paid CETA, CETA paid dimension data. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for those good input. I must indicate that we really appreciate them because they will really enrich our mitigation plan. Chairperson, with regard to the consideration of the transfer of employees, I need to indicate that yes, that was always one of the considerations, because we have said in our short-term plan or intervention that we have prioritized the filling of mainly coalface posts, such as those under incarceration and community correction. And we are also saying, for an example, on slide 30, that we are focusing on the trimming of head office, as well as regional offices, in line with the service delivery model through the redeployment process. So we want to appreciate the input that Honorable Self has given us, that F can also look at transferring officials from incarceration also to community correction. I think the one on education and upskilling of offenders, CBC incarceration will respond to that. But regarding the realignment of our structure in order to deal with the pandemic, I need to indicate that yes, currently we are busy with finalizing the development of our microstructure. And fortunately, when this pandemic came, it came at a time when we were focusing on that. And as a result, we have looked at that possibility to make sure that the department has sufficient resources in order to deal with the pandemic going forward. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Jefferson, before I get CDC incarceration to come in, I'll just ask that CDC strategic management just add on CDC's input on around the service delivery model so that we just share that, please. CDC in this strategic.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Chairperson and members of the subcommittee. I think my input would be related to Honourable Self's input, the two issues that he has raised, and also just to provide further information as to how we are trying to evolve as an organisation within the broader cluster. And as we've indicated that we already do not have enough resources to deal with the internal, as in the incarcerated population, as well as those who are serving sentences in the community. So part of the service delivery model and part of the business process mapping that we've undertaken has taken on board that understanding. And part of our planning has indicated that there must be broader participation across government and across society in general. And that is the direction that we are trying to drive the issue of not only corrections, but if you look at it, economic stability and development in general. So to move people from in-core to com-core, based on the current complement, might end up compromising one against the other. But also the alternative sentencing regime, there has to be confidence in it from because the judiciary who are basically responsible for saying either you go into custody or you go into community. But because of where we are now, we need to be able to establish that confidence that anybody serving a sentence within the community will be monitored accordingly. So it becomes a bigger discussion than corrections. And I think that's an important point to put across. The other issue that Honorable Self has raised is around the artisans in terms of the complement of artisans and then versus what we are trying to achieve in the facilities environment. And I think that's also exactly the same thing, that yes, we look at the offender population and there's obviously issues of eligibility and risk and so forth, who would be eligible to go and actually participate in this program. But then the artisan complement, does it necessarily have to come from the DCS payroll, or are there other resources across the community that can be leveraged on. What I'd like to bring forth here is that the discussion must become broader than looking at the correctional services mandate as prescribed, but rather to say, how do we ensure that we broaden the societal issues that actually impact on corrections, and then begin to have a progressive approach. So that's what our service delivery model is proposing, as well as the issues of the business process mapping, which say quite clearly that we have certain skills currently that are not fit for purpose, and they need to be deployed where they should be, and then we need to understand what are the required skills in order for us to be adequately delivering on our mandate. So I thought I'd just provide that context so that, you know, we can engage further going. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, Commissioner. The next person to respond.
CDC Incarceration, CDC Topakhali. Sorry, we seem to have a problem there, Chair. If we could, if we will look at his connectivity and if he could revert later because this is really...
Am I audible now, Commissioner?
Yes. Go ahead. I can hear you.
Okay. Apologies. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. And also regards to the Commissioner and the and colleagues. The, one of the issues that the Deputy Minister treated in his input was to also highlight the fact that the department would be focusing more on increasing our capacity to provide for our own needs. And we are going to do that through raising the level of self-sufficiency and self-sustainability. What we have sought to do in line with the annual performance plan is to develop a self-sufficiency and sustainability strategy. We have done that utilizing our own resources within the department as the first step of ensuring that in the midst of the budget crisis and also limited resources, we don't necessarily start by relying on the private sector and getting consultants to help us to do the work. The strategy is based on three pillars. The first pillar being revenue generation and revenue retention. The second pillar being the capitalization and expansion of our workshops and farm, but also expansion with regards to bakeries that we in the past three financial years have started introducing in the footprint of the production sites of DPS. The third pillar is human capital investment, and it's the pillar that also on Honorable Self referred to when it comes to the issue of artisans and educationists within the sub-complement of the department. What we are looking at is actually refocusing the department from the IT perspective, procurement and logistics, human capital investment, facilities maintenance and development, to consider utilizing the self-sufficiency and sustainability approach as the bedrock of planning and also financing. That would put us in a position for us to be able to upscale the value that we extract and also increase the impact of rehabilitation programs. So it is important, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that we get the correct skills into the department. For instance, if one may just give one example, we have a production site which is a piggery within the establishment of our farm. For us to be able to run a successful piggery, we need a technician that specializes in piggery. So in restructuring the department from this, the organizational structure perspective, but also in addressing human capital investment through recruitment, we are working with HR to put together an HR plan that focuses on ensuring that we are able to implement the self-sufficiency and sustainability strategy. What we are looking at is, on the side of impact, is increasing production and also increasing the market share. And we are looking at reducing the amounts that we buy from external service providers against increasing our own supply and also increasing the percentage of self-sufficiency. We are also looking at aggressively interacting with other government departments to ensure that we are able to supply, especially with regards to the size of furniture and other products that are utilized by other government departments. The strategy is going to be presented to the National Commissioner for final approval. It has been presented to the Ministry and Management for a principal approval. We are finalizing specific plans within the strategy. So we are finalizing a plan on HR as indicated, on IT, on logistics and supply chain. We are also finalizing a plan on facilities. And lastly, Honorable Chairperson, we and members, we are also firming up our own analysis of the performance of production workshops and farms for the past three financial years for us to be able to target properly in terms of specific with regard to upscaling production. Let me apologize, Honorable Chairperson, for giving a synopsis of the strategy. We will be able to present to the committee to the Honorable Committee in subsequent meetings once we have been able to submit the strategy to the National Commissioner and it has been approved. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you, DM and the Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. And can I proceed to the next member, Honorable Velma Nivo Drachen?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to all the members present and good morning to all the department members and the Deputy Minister. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions and it's linked to what Honorable Mofokeng has said about employment equity. And that right now it's, you're not showing, you know, the gender numbers and the youth numbers. I would like to add that I always like to see the people with disabilities to see if you are meeting the targets set for people with disabilities. So within your employment equity presentations, could you include all three, women, youth and people with disabilities? And then I would like a question of clarity. The 120 million that has not been paid because the service provider hasn't completed the requirements or the modules. I would like to know why then they didn't complete the modules. I mean, of course, you know, it's obvious if you don't finish a job, you don't get paid. You know, but and the department is not paying because the service is not completed. So is there a reason why they then took the department to court? So I'm not clear where, you know, how they did not finish the work, but they're still taking the department to court. And then there were two reports that were sent to us. And it was explained that the one was updated as the chairperson had mentioned earlier. The first report mentioned consultants to assist the department with internal resourcing, internal resources review. And I would like to ask, why can't National Treasury assist the department in doing that kind of work? And also the Auditor General has already mentioned or has already given a list of what needs to be done. So why do you need to hire consultants? Yes, there's no mention in the first report about consultants, but the first report, I mean, in the second report, there's no mention about consultants, but the first report gives a detailed step-by-step kind of progression and why are consultants being used in that process. Then Deputy Minister mentioned the LIFERS, the National LIFERS Task Team. But there are no details, you know, it just says that the professionals will be working, will be doing an assessment for 4 days and then a report on the fifth day. So I would like to know when the entire project will be completed, where all the reports given on the fifth day will be consolidated. Is it something that's still ongoing? Does it have a conclusion date? And then the department has, you know, the different categories of filling of vacancies, you know, it's related to budget cuts, so vacancies can't be filled. But the department has put categories for our attention. So the category of regulation 40D says the authority must, before filling a vacancy, assure that there is sufficient budget. So now the department is seriously impacted by the budget cuts, and the department also needs to fill the vacancies. So we have these regulations, but, you know, the minister hasn't explained to us, you know, about how they will take this on or how to support this. And maybe the portfolio committee needs to discuss how, you know, how to take this further, because the rule is there, the regulation is there, but the budget cuts are also there. So, you know, just we need to consider how to take this matter forward. Thank you very much, Chair. Those are my questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Adalma Nebo Drachen, a return of service commissioner on the issues raised by Honorable Adalma.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll ask the CDC HR to start and then CDC Gito. I'm not sure about the report that we're referring to. So I'm really trying to get
Municipal relations people to advise us.
That's a reposition of the candidate.
No. We'll, maybe I'll just indicate that we'll get the CDC HR and then CDC Gito to respond, and then we'll get CDC incarceration, Chairperson,
okay,
on the issue, and then we'll get the DC. Yeah. Thank you, CDC.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Once again, Honorable Members, we continue to appreciate the good input that we are getting from you. I think it was an oversight from our side not to include people with disabilities as part of those that we would be addressing in order to ensure that we reach the 2% national target that has been set for the department. I need to indicate from the onset, Chairperson, that currently as we stand, with regard to our statistics, 3%, while the female colleagues are 47%. That is the current statistics as it stands, Chairperson. And people with disabilities is 0.79%, which is less than 1%. However, I need to indicate, Chairperson, that in our APPs, for the new financial year, we have prioritized these categories of employees to be during the course of the financial year, we will be doing everything in our power to ensure that we reach the 2% target that has been set for people with disabilities, as well as 50-50% for both males and females. We definitely appreciate the last comment that was made by Honorable Velma, and would really like to encourage that, because in the GM speaking note, he indicated in conclusion that for this situation to be turned around, there is a real need for political intervention. So if perhaps from the side of the portfolio committee, something could be done in order to interact with national treasure, we will really appreciate that, because that will definitely prevent this national crisis that is currently looming. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, the service provider, we also did not understand why they wanted to jump to the arbitration process, because within the contract there are processes that are defined. We had to start with the informal dispute resolution process because they were arguing around the completion of certain modules. So the modules obviously had to go through phases to ensure that they are completely completed, and after that then we sign off, we pay. So as we were going through the informal dispute process, we appointed the chairperson. Then now they started disputing the appointment of the chairperson, of which it was in our contract to say the chairperson of informal dispute process will be the contract management of the department, and the deputy chair will be there from their side. So suddenly, as we were arguing on every award or every completion of work that they have done, they now started to withdraw. They were quick to run to arbitration process, and as we were also going through that process, they also started imposing arbitrators to the department, of which we said no. The arbitrators that they were proposing, they were not even or even have done work in an IT environment, more so was on the engineering process. So we still not understanding why they were quick to run into an arbitration process while the informal dispute process was still underway. And they also started writing letters to the department of, in terms of demanding the outstanding amount. Hence we said, no, then if you start demanding with demand letters, it's also saying that we should also go for arbitration as process defined in our contract. So we don't have a reason, or they don't have a reason to rush to arbitration while the process of informal dispute was still undertaken. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, DCSOC, I'm going to respond to the issue relating what to say, why consultants to assist the department with clarifying or addressing the irregular nature. But before that, Chair, I just need to clarify the issues relating to report submissions. I've just been informed that there were seven areas of information requests from the portfolio committee to the department. And amongst the requests, there were a detailed request relating to the audit action plan with specific timeframes. And secondly, there was also a request for a presentation by the audit committee on measures undertaken by them to assist the department to address the audit quality department activities that is presented, given their independence. And thirdly, there was also a high-level presentation with regard to which summarizes issues relating to the audit action plans as well as the measures to address the irregular expenditure. So in that sense, Chair,
none of the reports was actually withdrawn. They were all forwarded to the portfolio committee to address such. But now coming to the question that was raised by the honorable member, so that yes, it's true that there was engagement between the department as well as National Treasury in relation to the issues of credit or eliminating or addressing the irregular expenditure within the department. But the primary reason why the department has also sought the assistance of appointing consultants to address the irregular expenditure, it was mainly due to the issues of capacity within the SCM, the nature and the extent of the work that needs to be done to ensure that come at least the 31st of March, or at least before the finalization of the financial statements, we need to address the issues of the irregular expenditure. Now, the reason why I'm emphasizing the issue of the extent is because the department has to go through the entire population of all payments and processes and see which specific irregular expenditures could have been identified, which was not disclosed on the financial statements, and then accordingly they need to disclose that. So looking at the populations of transactions and the extent of the work that needed to be done, that hence the need for appointing consultants to assist with the process. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner?
Thank you, Chairperson. The CDC incarceration, but is it just possible that we get the question again on the LIFAS, please, Chair? We seem to be missing the exact question on the LIFAS by Honorable Nibel Drachen.
Honorable Velma, let's repeat it.
Thank you. Deputy Minister mentioned the National LIFAS Task Team and to getting professionals to travel to the different regions to assess the LIFAS. And on the fifth day of the 5 days, they produce a report. So I wanted to know the time frames for that. Has that team already started working? Will they start working? And when will all the reports be compiled and submitted to the department? So my question is related to time frames about the entire project. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dalma. There you go, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. I've just asked the CDC incarceration to respond to that, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The task team has already started working.
Can you ask him to come closer to the mic so that you can hear him properly? Whatever mic that is there. It sounds very far. It looks like he's in one of these maximum prisons.
Apologies, Honorable Chairperson. Am I audible now?
You're getting better. You're on parole.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I was indicating that the task team has already started doing its work, and it does its work with the assistance or in collaboration with our area commissioners and also our head of centers. We are monitoring the work of the task team with specific reports on cases that have been considered on a weekly basis. And we have divided the work in line with the different cases of LIFAS that we are considering. For instance, we have the task team looking at PASA cases. They are also looking at the Van Wyk judgment cases. And we are specifically focusing on the profiles that are overdue in terms of the date of submission, those that have exceeded the date of submission. We are tracking their quality, the process of them being processed by our parole board and the NCCS, And those that are taken for the minister's decision were also taking that, and that includes the Van Vuuren cases. So we have put the first date of assessment to be the 30th of April. We have already provided to the committee through a presentation that we have submitted the progress work that we have done on the as an outcome of the work of the task team. The presentation is titled Presentation on Matters Raised by the Portfolio Committee Pertaining to Backlogs. It outlines the progress that we have already made so far, and it indicates that the first assessment period would be the 30th of April for us to be able to see the extent to which the work of the task team has impacted on the backlog. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Let me now just raise a few questions before we get to the follow-ups. And maybe let me start because I would want the Deputy Minister and the Commissioner to pay particular attention to what I'm going to say. And I want to be upfront about it. I think firstly, if you can just share, Commissioner and Deputy Minister, what your mandate is. What your mandate is and how far in your work and what you are presenting to us is that from your mandate. I'm going to be raising these general points because it seems that this department with these thousands of committed selfless service men and women who do this thankless job of society, those people that are no longer wanted by society, they fall into your hands. It seems that once we have that, the systems of this department are run externally. This department relies on external role players. Throughout this presentation, in the presentation of the DM, you hear a lot of reliance and dependency on consultants. And there doesn't seem to be any transfer of those skills. You talk about a period of years where consultants have been used, but there's just no result that you get out of the use of those consultants. That's the first point. But secondly, and this relates, and I'm saying this relates to the mandate, because Honorable South came closer to indicate to you at the core of your mandate, anchoring your mandate is the issue of rehabilitation. I agree with Katenga. He raised a profound point about the work, what you're dealing with is a reflection of what is happening in society. That's very true. Nobody can dispute that. I accept that. But there are things that this department, in my view, is failing on that cannot be associated with the problems happening in society. And I'll go through many of those. Because when you are not able to do interviews to a point to deal with this and that, that has nothing to do with that, what's happening in society. For example, you have 15 out of 243 centers that are conforming to the requirements. 1.5, only 15 out of the 243. Across this, it seems that, and I'll give more details, I'm going to be going through slide by slide, and you'll be better if you put them on show already. You seem to be a 30% plus percentage performance department. A 30% plus. We're not even talking about 50% here on quite a number of issues, and I'll share some of the examples of that. So you have this chronic underperformance. Not even mentioning the issue of the irregular actions, because if, as you say, your last annual report, this is what the AG picked up. Because when you deal with an issue of irregular, in my own understanding as an executive before and as a member of parliament now, it is a serious occurrence. Here it seems to be a normal occurrence in the department. I also want to make the point in concluding these general points before I go to the specifics, that in music terms, there is something they called a new release. You know, when a new song is brought to the market, it's called a new release. Now I want to indicate that in terms of DCS, you have also come up with a new release, and I'm not going to buy it. Your new release now as DCS is that of COVID-19. Everything else that is not happening, there's an association with COVID-19. You'll say to us, with these beautiful plans by 20th of March and then COVID came. I'm not buying that new release from DCS for the simple reason that before COVID, I knew you. We had walked a journey with you. And that journey before COVID does not assist me to agree with you that the problems that you have are as a result of you not being able to do certain things under COVID. So I don't buy that argument. I would expect a better explanation and justification of issues than a mere COVID explanation. Of course, there will be areas where if you had looked at level 5 and 4 and 3 and all of those certain things could not happen. That we know. But for that to be used as a general explanation and justification, I'm asking you not to do that because we know you before COVID. And I'm posing these questions both to the commissioner and the deputy minister, and the team can assist. I am interested in your reports. You saying the NCCC, the parole review report, that is with the chair of that justice, and it's not even explaining what's the status of that, how far is that. And I think I'm looking for a better explanation. Let me go to some of the slides, and I'll start with the presentation on the IMS. There's quite a lot of issues that I want to pick up out of that in relation to that. I think members have raised this issue of the contractual disputes that has been lodged. Because in this case, it seems there's a stalled progress. There's no visible progress, in my view, even before COVID. So I wouldn't expect anybody to talk about COVID as being the reason for things not to happen. You have, as part of this intervention, you're saying in slide number 4, a 3-year-long contract appointments were made and subsequently expired in the 2019-2020. And my question is, with what results? Because you're not getting results out of that. What can you show off after 3 years? And I'll go further to the specific about how much money, the tranches of money that were spent, And out of those monies, you don't necessarily see the result. That I have a problem with. Well, the question I'm asking, who's getting paid and paid to do what, which you don't see? We've been sitting with this problem because the objectives, as you explained, are so noble about what this intends to do. And I'll read one of those. It says the IMS project seeks to achieve the goal of a single view of offender through single capture of inmate and offender information, the kind of one-stop shop for detained inmate parolees and so on. That's a noble objective, a noble cause, but time has elapsed. You don't see what is happening. You're now over 5 years kind of dealing with the same thing. And the reason I'm asking the money was page 2 of that slide 2, which is the title Project Overview. You've got that picture there. It would have been good if it was shown on the screen. But you've got a picture and arrows of the admission, the detention, and then the release. Underage, you have demand, incarceration, and community corrections. That slide. And I like the way you did it, because the way you did it begins to demonstrate that your core mandate, what anchors your mandate, which is rehabilitation, is just a side issue. Well, that should have been, because before they are released, are they released being rehabilitated? Before COVID, you did explain to us quite admirably that part of the challenge to achieving this objective, this mandate of rehabilitation, are issues of overcrowding, issues of infrastructure, and so on. I get that. But that does not explain, because as Honorable South made the point, that even in your budgeting, in your allocation of resources, because one is not getting a picture here that says, we don't have money today, but if we had money, this is how we're packaging the rehabilitation program. As we speak, it's obviously the least funded because you exist for that. You don't exist to do what was done before democracy, just to get prisons and cells and just get people and hope that they die there. Because that was the mandate. This, your mandate is informed by the restorative justice. And one is not saying that. Hence, I'm posing the question to the DM and the commissioner. Tell us about your mandate, but I am of the view that you're far off from the mandate. We're busy with all sorts of things. Then I'll take you to the next slide, slide 6. Progress summary. Slide 6. If you can get that. But in this slide, this is a slide, because this is where I'm getting your performance as just being 30 plus. In this slide, progress summary, software systems, development life cycle, and there's a diagram below. And in that, you it says deliverable item, business requirements, functional requirements, technical design specification, development build, quality assurance, and so on. In relation, the only things, now out of 6 deliverable items, out of 6 deliverable items that you have there, you're only looking better in 2 of those. Is the remand detention, which the overall percentage completion is 91%. And the second one is your IJS integration with your 80% overall completion. Everything else is 30%. overall completion. Hence, it is in the red. And the reason for that, because this speaks now to your healthcare services, to your pharmacy, to your incarceration and corrections, to your community corrections. And the three contributing areas that give you this non-performance relates to your functional requirements specification, your technical design specification, your development build. Now, this and those issues are very important to the kind of mandate and program that you're supposed to achieve. And it forced me to ask the question, what are the stakeholders beside yourself that are assisting you, that are working with you in item 1 and 6, the ones you're doing better? Because I just suspected that these ones that you are doing better, it seems you're not alone. Because when you are alone, we see the red as we see it. So it made me be curious about who these stakeholders, probably consultants again. Hence my earlier point about this over-reliance, this over-dependence on consultants. Let me go to slide 9, project financials. Slide 9, project financials. Here it's you explain, for example, yes, thank you, that as we meet here today, a total of 259 million, 68% of the 380 million was paid to this service provider. That much was paid. And again, I'm coming back to my question. For that amount of money, you don't seem to be able to show what that money bought from this integrated solutions, IaaS kind of service provider. And then you go on breaking that down correctly, and thank you for that. 68 million, 18% about the initial outright purchase of this in June 2016. Then you go on and so on. So you paid this money, but we still sit with a problem. Let alone the fact that you're saying you have a dispute. Because your dispute is this, you have a dispute because this service provider wants the rest of the money. And yet we're still sitting with a system that is not working. I didn't hear going through this presentation whether you are giving us any noble intervention about that, besides the fact that there's arbitration and this. Because money has been spent. But what we wanted to address seems to be very far off to be attended to. So who got the money and got the money to do what? Because the impact is very difficult to see. Let me leave that slide and go to the next, which is your DCS status of critical and scarce skills post and the impact of the COE. Just a few questions to raise there. On slide 5, you make the point that the impact of this cut on the cost on employment baseline has a serious potential to affect the delivery of correctional services negatively and render it dysfunctional. And I'm making a comment which I want both you and Deputy Minister to comment on, which says, but DCS is already dysfunctional. This is the point I'm making, even before that cut. Given the kind of report that we're hearing. Slide 6, status on the overall SMS post as of 31st January 2021. Now, this is where I come in, Mr. Katenga. that your problems, that the problems you're dealing with are a reflection of society, and I agree with you 100%. Anytime, even if you come 12 o'clock midnight, I will agree with you on that. But if you come to this slide, for the chief directors, that level 14 and level 13, the vacancy rate of 37, 38% and 25% has nothing to do with problems of society. This is about the capability and the capacity and competence in the department. The non-filling of vacancies is a problem that has to be attended to, and if it's not attended to, there must be consequences. And so I can't buy that argument when it comes to this. And so I can go on to the next slide, slide 7. You still have the same trend. I'm happy with what the DM has said, even though in your recommendations, these things I might have to assist you are not coming out very strong. Because the DM says you want to begin a process of streamlining and taking the fat out of the head office. There's a fat out of the head office. I don't know how that happened, because head office is not a delivery point. It is a strategic point, yes, I agree, where you need to have critical capacity, but in terms of the mandate of this department, that's not where it's happening. But again, there, same levels, 14 and 13, same trend of vacancy rate, 37%, 27%. This cannot be, and I'm coming further, this cannot be blamed on COVID, your new release. Because I know that you had this problem before COVID. When we deal with that annual report before COVID, I indicated to you that this seems to be a sick department and the HR matters were high and were bulk of that problem. So I don't listen to COVID as a new release, because I'm able to balance you before COVID and during COVID. And so the trend gets to be the same. And I might not bore you with all of those. There are a few areas that you seem to be suggesting something, and yet not saying anything about them, which I thought I'm getting excited here. One of those areas, if I can just quickly, I did highlight them, perhaps even if it's under this issue of merging certain functions. I think a lot of those issues were raised in the presentation by the Deputy Minister. So I'm raising that, and then I come to the progress on the audit one. A very short one, and I must just say that my surprise here on this presentation, it seems that this presentation did not listen to the Deputy Minister. It seems this presentation did not listen to the other presentation that we've gone through, because this presentation does not demonstrate a shock and a crisis from an audit committee point of view. It seems that things are normal in the way it is doing here. It says, on irregular expenditure, the department is appointing consultants to provide support, resources to review the entire population of tenants. Again, you're going back to that comfort zone of relying to external role players. And then I was missing when you're speaking about some investigations, some concluded, and I was not sure which of these will be conceptualized, those investigations have been produced and implemented by consultants and not the department. Because you can't continue investing in the external skills and not invest in the future of this department. So I thought I must just quickly raise those issues and ask both the commissioner as well as the DM to assist in responding to many of those issues. Thank you very much. Commissioner and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to ask the CDC GITO to respond so that they're just able to provide some technical response. I'll then ask the CFO to respond to others. I'll also get the CDC HR to deal with some of the other questions you've put to us, Chairperson. If I can just do that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe if we can go to those specific slides, then we will be able to talk to them. So on the slide where we are putting in a picture or summarize what the is intent to resolve. So within the value chain of the department, remand, incarcerations and corrections, and community corrections, the rehabilitation program is being included in that process. So rehabilitation is included in that process, Chairperson, if you look at the picture. And if you look at what is depicted on the side, is to say that in terms of the overview and what we want to achieve for IMF is to manage healthcare and all development programs, rehabilitation, manage visitation and visit profiling and the offender base. And we're also saying these are the sites where we are targeting for the system to run at. And the first two slides of the presentation, Chairperson, of our presentation, we have identified current problems of the department in terms of their systems. We do have existing systems that have been there since the 1990s. And one of the biggest challenges is every center that is existing in the department management area runs its own system. Hence, we can't have that integration. They do have the sub-modules of rehabilitation, health, pharmacy, but those modules as well were developed independent of the main module of the AMR. So if you take Cochin Mampur, for example, currently care, it has its own version of admission and relief. It's got its own version of community correction. That is not talking to the admission and relief version that is in Joburg or in Cape Town or in Devon Westville. So with the IMS, we are trying to have that single view. That means one database that is that synchronizes the information. And the bigger challenge is if you incarcerate an individual in Cochin Mampur, you release them. Then he goes and commits a crime in another province. You cannot link the two because of that decentralized piece or architecture of solution that exists today. So with the IMS, we are trying to centralize that, and we have achieved that process. Now, today, if I go into the integration point and pull out data and put in an offender number today, that has been rolled out with IMS. While I'm sitting here in the room, I'm able to have that full profile of that offender, the remand detention, profile of the offender, of which with ANR we cannot have. So the biggest achievement that we have currently is that integrated portion of the system. It has not rolled out to incarceration community correction because those modules are incomplete. Hence, you see the rates that are in slide number 11. So number six, sorry. So the what the rates that are there is if you do system development, there are processes that you undertake. Those processes are defined on the top level, which says that you do business requirements, you gather what the user needs and requires, you do the functional requirements, you do technical. So all those are processes that you have to take when you do a build of a solution, because you take it's a different process that we are undertaking. We are not acquiring an already existing or developed solution that is going to be owned by a third party or by a service provider. We are developing a solution that at the end of the day, whether we want to change, whether our process changes, we are able to go and amend. So the process of system development lifecycle was not completed, as you see the rate that we acknowledge. Hence, we are saying to them, you have not completed this, therefore we cannot pay you, because all the processes need to be completed and be paid for, then you are able to claim the money. So if they have not completed this, we cannot provide the, we cannot pay for their service. If you go to the slide of slide 11, we explaining where the money went. The first portion, as we said, development framework, which is the baseline of the solution. So when you have, when you develop a solution, you have to have that baseline. Otherwise, you don't have any software, you don't have any way where you are developing a solution. So that's where what we have paid for. The next portion, which is 11%, is the biometric engine. So currently we have a biometric engine that takes biometrics of over a million fingerprints, 10 fingerprints of over a million. So if if we have more than a million offenders over the next period of time that we are going to incarcerate or through a parole or probation process, that engine is built, is there, is catering for more than a million. So you don't repeat the fingerprints. So today, if you go away, we have already captured your 10 fingerprints. When you come back, we will be able to just retrieve your fingerprints that we have captured with the biometric solution that we have implemented. The 8% also is part of the software. There are annual maintenance and support of software that we have acquired in the 68 million that you see on top. So you see that software, we have to pay licenses for maintenance and support of the solution. Otherwise, then the solution, then there's no any patching, there's nothing of that solution, then it deteriorates, it doesn't function as it's supposed to function if you don't pay those maintenance support. So on the three items that are there, it's something that we cannot avoid, that we are still going to go through and maintain on our own as a department on that. So out of that, that for professional services, because we had to have skilled developers to develop the module and also configure the solution as you see on top of the baseline, the development framework, the biometric engine, and the licensing portion of it. We only paid 16 million to the service provider for those services, including developing all the BRDs and developing the full baseline, including the integration to IJS. The 120 was to further and finalize the development options that are not yet completed. Hence, we say we can't. If we don't use the module, then we can't pay for it. But the baseline, the backbone of the system itself exists. It's owned by the department. It cannot be taken away. So the money that we paid, we are still utilizing the services that are implemented, which are the software and the biometric engine of the solution itself. So in that, it just covers why we are doing this process. And we also depend on the officials where we go there, because we have to train the officials, and then the officials have to utilize the system on a daily basis. So we are progressing quite fairly well to roll out the completed module of remand detention. We have progressed fairly well in the IJS integration, where we said at any point of time, we are able to log on to that one system and pull the data of the offenders where the IMS have been implemented. So we currently now in KZN, Durban Westville and Pietermaritzburg, we finalize that, then we go to the Western Cape. And when we do this rollout, we are estimating that we already covered 60% of the remand detention population that we have in the country. The remaining sites are small sites where the offenders, the remand detaining offenders are not that many. So we have covered, by the end of the financial year, we have covered 60% of the population of remand detention in the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Janki, for those eye-opening questions. I need to agree with you that it is true that this explanation and excuse that people normally bring forth about COVID-19 is really, really frustrating, especially even when you look at the delivery of services that are supposed to have taken place. I mean, we have seen it also in America, where the former president, Donald Trump, used to put it on the table as an excuse for a lot of things. We agree with that. But one of the things, Chairperson, that we have seen, we have tried to move away from that, because really, we felt that we don't want to come with this excuse. But at the end of the day, we found that really was dictating for us to end up explaining things in that way. For instance, Chairperson, if you go to slide number 19 of our presentation, you would see there that out of those four or five reasons that we have highlighted, as the identified challenges which affected our timeliness filling of post, four of them are related to COVID-19. We tried to move away from it, but we found that it is indeed reality. I mean, the fact that immediately after the state president announced in terms of the Disaster Management Act, specific regulations, where amongst others there were restrictions in terms of things that people used to do before. It also affected us as a department. For instance, the reason why we put a moratorium on the filling of polls, it is because we were aware that people can no longer move from one province to another as a result of this lockdown. There were serious challenges. So we couldn't really be the only one department where we would be inviting candidates from one province to attend interviews in another province, you know. And over and above that, Chairperson would also recall, like as we are currently sitting now, that one of the realities was we need to ensure social distancing. We can't be sitting around the table, all of us, sitting with an applicant here, interviewing the applicant and so on and so forth. So we had to grapple with that, especially because at the time when this pandemic started, we were not clear about how is it, you know, transferring or transferred from one person to the other. We relied on what the Department of Health was telling us and so on. And as a result, we said, you know what, in order to ensure that we protect our members as well as the citizens from being infected, let us say for now we put a moratorium, especially during lockdown level 5, 4 to 3. And then from level 2 and 1, it will again resume all the necessary processes. The other one, which was also a reality, especially after resuming all processes, was the fact that, remember, Chairperson, that before we appoint officials, we have to verify, we have to do what we call vetting in order to ensure that we verify their qualifications, their criminal records, and so on and so forth. Now, one reality that we found was most of the departments, like your South African Qualification Authority, the Criminal Bureau, Home Affairs, and so on, they were also on lockdown. So it was a challenge that we sent these things to them for them to verify, and only to find that they don't respond on time. When we follow up, we are told that no, but the department is currently on lockdown. We don't have people who are working in offices and so on. As a result, because we did not want also to affect our own progress in terms of this, we had to, you know, develop a declaration form where we are saying to the candidate, listen here, we trust in what you are telling us, but we want you to declare that you don't have criminal records, you don't have this kind of thing, your qualifications are correct and so on. Should it happen that we found out later after the department has verified the other things that you were lying to us, we'll be left with no other option except to dismiss you. So that was a real thing, Chairperson, that we were faced with. Another one which was also important, Chairperson, remember that we are also guided by DPSA as the lead department in terms of management of human resources. DPSA said in their Circular 7 of 2020, employers throughout the public service, especially in government, go and make sure that you don't roster everyone all at once. Make sure that you roster about 50% of your staff while the other 50% remains at home to avoid a situation where all of them could be infected simultaneously at work. We had to rely on that. It also affected us in terms of ensuring that our processes are done on time. The other one, which was also significant, which also came later, somewhere in October, was the issue of DPSA again. Instructing departments that, look, from now onwards, you are no longer going without the endorsement of the accounting officer, because we want the accounting officer to identify that post as critical for it to be advertised. Otherwise, we are not going to accept that any department should just advertise if that has not been approved by the accounting officer. So these are more or less some of the challenges that we experienced during this lockdown process or period. And then the most important one, which is still a challenge that you still recall, Chair, when we presented to you somewhere in 2019, was about the human resource budget planning tool. I remember you asked me about that. You said, what is this HRBP tool of yours? And this HRBP tool, Chairperson, is a tool that National Treasury has introduced in government to say the department should limit its post-establishment to this particular number. Now, in our case, the National Treasury has said your limit should only be at 7,500. You must not exceed this.
everything that is above this limit, you must go and abolish them. We don't want to hear you telling us about PERSAL, because we have been working on PERSAL. Now, PERSAL does not have a limit, because why? PERSAL is dependent on the number of, for an example, offenders that we are getting. Remember that we have what we call a staff to inmate ratio. So the more we get offenders in our correctional centers, the more we are also forced to increase our post establishment. So we didn't have a limit as a result of this. Now, we had a meeting with National Treasury late in November last year to say, please, can't you allow us as a department to continue using PERSAL instead of HRBP2? So that is the one we are having. But be it as it may, I need to give you the assurance and to refer you to our client 18, where you see that even though we had all these challenges, we have been really working hard to fill our positions to the extent that currently, as we are talking, our vacancy rate is standing at 8.7%, which is well below the 10% that has been set by the DPSA. We have ensured that we fill our post in as far as South African youth are concerned, as well as your ex-DCS officials. We have also ensured that we have filled all those contract posts which are additional to establishment with professionals, health practitioners. Because remember now, here we were dealing with a pandemic. This pandemic wanted us to face it head on. So we had to appoint plus minus 573 of these health practitioners, including medical doctors, psychologists, social workers, and so on, in order to assist us to be able to fight this pandemic, Chairperson. Chairperson, due to the time, I have to indicate that we are really doing everything in our power, and we want to assure you that we will be able to address this particular challenge that we are continuously experiencing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to comment on the issue of the presentation relating to the audit action plan. Chair, we take note of the comments that you raised as far as indicating that the presentation does not demonstrate a shock or any crisis within the department. We take note of that. However, Chair, I want to emphasize that with regard to the irregular expenses, I need to clarify that the investigation of the irregular expenditure within the department is a process that is actually undertaken using internal resources, not necessarily consultants, with regard to that department. Consultants are only assisting the department only to ensure the full disclosure of all that irregular expenditure to the financial statements. As I previously indicated, that given the extent and nature of the actually required. So I just needed to clarify to say to what extent is the department utilizing consultants. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if you allow me, I'll just ask the CFO to give an input, and then I'll come in, Chair.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. I want to just reiterate, Chairperson, that we are not proud of our irregular expenditure. We want to reduce this occurrences of irregular expenditure. But perhaps just to indicate, Chairperson, that the grant finance and supply chain are not spared in terms of the cuts on COE, compensation of employees. We have situations where due to the budget cuts, we have done recruitment, have done advertisement of post recruitment, and appointments are supposed to happen, But given the fact that we had a sudden cut in the current financial year, there are posts that we are unable to fill. And some of these posts are important in terms of our strategy or our plan to prevent irregular expenditure. One of the issues that are critical is the issue of bid committees. If supply chain is not properly capacitated, the speed between which we respond towards implementation of the annual procurement plan is hampered. And when that is the case, you will find that then we don't have contracts in place for purposes of renewing. Then we default into purchasing of through price quotations, which in aggregate, if you buy goods and services through quotation and exceed the threshold of 500,000, then that is regarded as irregular expenditure. If we look at the makeup of our irregular expenditure, we have at the end of March 2020, we had 4 billion of irregular expenditure, of which 1.8 billion or 45% of it was as a result of non-compliance, where we had signed an agreement with Independent Development Trust, which is an entity under Public Works, to do fencing projects on behalf of correction services. This non-compliance occasioned by IDT had to be disclosed in our book as irregular expenditure. We also have, the case at the point of the IDT is also part of the subject of an SI investigation. There are others, chapters where a non-compliance with procurement, that's where we were doing the AMA audit, where we participated in a contract with the Department of Higher Education. It was found to be regular at 158 million. It's also a case that is a subject of SI investigation. And the biggest one that we have is where, as indicated, that we don't have contracts in place, but we're in the process of securing those contracts. It's on the procurement of perishable provisions, which amounts to just over 1 billion rand as at the end of March 2020. So I just wanted to indicate to the person that as much as we some of these goods and services are not discretionary, particularly on the perishable, even though you don't have contracts, you need to buy food items. But we are trying by all means to improve the accelerating the implementation of the procurement plan. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to indicate that we always look forward to engaging the committee, because the committee continues to challenge us as officials, and we are obligated to respond accordingly. I therefore want to state, Chair, that it's correct to say that the department has challenges and has had challenges. As the leadership of the department, we have done a diagnostic on what the challenges have been, and we have, over the past 2 years, often reviewed to assess where we are in terms of that diagnostic. Now, what we have established, big problems within the department, procedural, organizational, and structural problems. And as such, Chair, we had adopted a long-term view on how we need to plan for the department. You have raised the issue of new generation facilities that is only 15 at the moment. We had reflected and said that our official offenders do not remain in 5-year stints in our facilities.
Some of them are sentenced to beyond 30 years. And so we needed to have a long-term outlook. And as a result, we had adopted what we called the 2068 plan or strategy. So we went beyond the NDP of the country because we felt that it's in that way that we can systematically develop plans that create correction. I think what's also a challenge, not just in this department, but in government, is the frequent rotation of executive and accounting officers, and I think it impacts on continuity. The matter that CDC Katenga had spoken to earlier actually reflects part of our decision to look at this long-term vision, where we'd looked at the service delivery model, our operational management framework, so that it informs a functional, effective, and streamlined organization. And therefore, there's lots of pressure being placed on us, Chair, to ensure that we, by the executive, to ensure that we get our microstructure finalized. And I think the emphasis from our strategic outlook is to say, as you have correctly placed, Chairperson, that we must be center-centric because our services are only performed at center level. And therefore, CDC HR may have reflected the fact that even when we looked at appointments, we looked at the centers first. So when we look at the vacancies at the SMS level, at head office, we are not prioritized head office because we felt that when we look at the organizational design and the realignment, we can't prioritize head office over the coal face. And that was where we placed great emphasis. So that is something that we are placing a premium on, Chairperson. We've also realized that as he's a sponsor of self-sustainability framework and its implementation, but we are now saying that people need to work in a more integrated manner so that we are able to more speedily respond to these implementation plans that we have. I think another point that we have made through our planning is that we have given our head office to define clearly what this should be. It may sound obvious, Chair, but we've told our head office that you need to be centers of excellence, and therefore you need to be in the mode, and you need the mere capability to deal with the research and development, that you are able to monitor and evaluate, and that you need to ensure that there's compliance and be a facilitator to the code phase. So, when we are assessing our CDCs in the new financial year, will we be looking at how are they becoming enablers at the coalface, but also how they are accountable, not just for their branch, but accountable all the way to the coalface. When we talk about government at large, we are in the process of finalizing, firstly, we're centralizing all our MOUs, but finalizing it so that we are able to monitor our service level agreements, both with NPOs as well as with government, so that the work of the department is prioritized and that we are driven to ensure that we've realized that our standard operating procedure, the most basic one, which is called the B order, has not been reviewed in this democracy. We have now signed and will be signing the B order of by next week. It's the B order is over 1,000 pages, but the B order basically tells an official what is required from operational sense from A to Z. We've also reviewed our policies. We've now signed off and developed handbooks because we realized that at the supervision, at the management level, that we have been challenged. So we've developed handbooks for heads of centers that is being handed over the next 2 weeks to every head of center so that we understand that there is a consistent application of supervision and management throughout the country. We've also developed and signed off the area commissioner's handbook. And this one is important because it's aligned to the president's model, basically based on the district development model, because our area commissioners are consistent to the districts. Not in one instance, but we're trying to look at the line. So we accept that we are challenged, but we are putting mechanisms in place to ensure that we solidify our foundation and that we are able to build on that. And I think the assurance we can provide the chair and the committee is that these building blocks will at least be the foundations for greater evolution within the space of corrections. On the issue of facilities, we've developed a master plan so that we have a 50-year outlook on what facilities we should have based on migration patterns of the country and where we think we should have our facilities. So that work has been done, it's been refined, and our facilities colleagues are interacting both with public works, with the police, and with the Department of Justice at this point in regards to where we think our facilities should be placed. A critical partnership that we're looking to strengthen, besides others, is the area of social development. Because if we talk about the family of corrections, we know that it can't be without social development and basic education. Chairperson, we are also in the final stages of developing a policy document on integrity testing of all our officials. And this means that we won't rely, but we'll be able to on an ad hoc and random basis to test colleagues based on their integrity. So this is something we're going to engage with organized labor so that we could get this matter finalized at the earliest stage. And we believe that if we develop this mechanism of integrity testing of all our officials, it will both act as a detection mechanism as well as a deterrent mechanism. So on the issue of COVID, I want to agree that we shouldn't flag it, but I have to take responsibility for the slack in performance in this report. Because, Chair, when COVID hit us, the concern from myself, first and foremost, and from the Apex leadership, was that we expected a massive implosion within our facilities because of the nature of COVID. And we may have overreacted, Chair. And therefore, I say I'll take the responsibility for that. What COVID has done at its onset, it created a stigmatization of our officials, which our HR component had to provide support to assist our officials and ensure that we're able to deal with other employees so that we are able to deal with the fears, the issues of isolation from our members. So Chair, I think from my side, correctly as you said, Chair, you know, I can only, during this period of COVID, I can only commend my management and the officials for the non-implosion of corrections because of their resilience and their focus to the task. I'm hoping that I've covered, I know I've tried to talk to the issue of mandate. I agree there's much more to be done, Chair. But I think through your guidance of the committee, the leadership of the executive, I know that with the leadership I have on this end, we will err, but we will endeavor to deliver the services as mandated to us by the Constitution. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable DM.
Thank you, Jefferson, for affording us an opportunity to respond to the concerns that you have as a committee representing Parliament in terms of representing the South African public. We come to Parliament because it is mandatory that we do in order to account. And as we come here, we come because we hope to and expect to be given an understanding from people who are outside of the department itself, the people who represent the interests of the public, both those outside of our centers and those that are within our center. And therefore, the insights that you give us assists us in ensuring that we endeavor to perform better than we have been doing before. Some of the progress that you are definitely aware of, even if the occasion has not called for you to raise them, are because of your intervention as a committee, and we appreciate that. The department, I think everybody knows, has been damaged in the recent past because of the practices that were obtaining within the environment. And as you can see from the cases that are before court that involve millions of rand, they have to do with what was happening there. And as a constitutional state, we are bound to respect the processes of law enforcement in the form of the judiciary. Even though we might have wished that these cases are not there, we are forced to be involved because it is the constitutional right of those concerned to defend their interests in our courts, and we cannot move them as much as we can. Indeed, it's surprising to us as a ministry and also as a department that people who know that they had the contract in terms of which they were expected to deliver certain services. Now that they have not delivered those services, they expect the department to continue to pay them. It is absurd. But as you members know, that court processes are not straightforward processes. There are technicalities, there are procedures. People lose cases on the basis of procedures, even before the court processes get into the method of the matter concerned. Now, regardless of that, Chairperson, sure, again, the committee will agree. The department has its shortcomings, its faults, as you have pointed them out to us, but it is a functioning department. It continues to keep in custody safely and securely detainees, remand detainees that have been brought to us by the court and by the police to keep them until their trials have been concluded or cases withdrawn, whatever the outcome may be. It continues, the department, to keep sentenced offenders in safe custody, securely, therefore contributing to a safer community of the people of South Africa. We continue to provide them with rehabilitation programs that are aimed at correcting their conduct. so that when they come out of our centers, they are better people than they were before. That is why we have people that are on parole, even as we speak, in spite of the difficulties and the challenges that are facing the parole boards and also the NCCS and so on. So we continue, Chairperson, to show that the department, regardless of its challenges, is functional to keep them in correctional, in community corrections. I know that a number of them do commit crimes while they are out on parole, which brings about a stigma to the institution that we had. But the great majority of them, more than 95%, do comply with the conditions that have been given to them for them to be out on parole. We are not working alone. We are working with other institutions of the state, like the SAPS, like the courts and so on. We know that some of the escapes that occur are usually taking place sometimes in when they are in transit between the courts and our centers. While they are in the custody of the police, we do work together, whether the escapes occur from our centers or from the police, when it's necessary for us to work together, we do work together to ensure that such escapes are addressed properly and devise means of ensuring that they do not occur too frequently. We also, as I say, work with the courts. The courts are the ones that determine whether a person should be incarcerated into our centers or whether a person must be given probation, whether a person should serve the sentence outside of our center. So we don't have much of a control over that, except that in our meetings that have been indicated here in the presentation, case flow management committees and so on, we do indicate to each other the impact of what the other sectors are doing on the other, so that we minimize instances of failure on the part of each one of us. So there's no silver bullet except to ensure that the justice cluster works together, tries as much as it can to ensure that you don't work in silos, that people should not be glad that they have sent people to jail, even in instances where it is not really necessary for them to be taken to jail. Fortunately, the matter of the amendment of some of the laws rests with this justice and the constitutional and justice and correctional services committee. For instance, there's this question of minimum sentences that are mandatory to be imposed by our courts. We believe that in certain instances, the discretion of the court is hamstrung, because that it might be that in the circumstances of a particular case, the imposition of a minimum sentence is not warranted, which means therefore that there must be some kind of flexibility. Of course, it's in our interest to ensure that in order to address overcrowding in our centers, a number of inmates have to be released. But you have to be aware of the fact that the community out there still needs to be educated, starting even with the matter of bail. Some members of the community, once they believe that a person has committed a crime, they believe that the best thing for the court to do is to keep them in jail and not grant them bail. Or if they are granted bail, they are given severe conditions, including high amounts of money for the payment of bail. Then they also, when people are released on parole, because they are entitled to be in terms of the conditions that are laid down in our processes and policies and laws, people continue to need to be engaged and educated. And we would appeal to the committee that it could assist. Maybe we've also been failing as a committee or as a department, I think, in not inviting the portfolio committee to some of the activities that you are performing. Because for you to be able to have more insight and to be able to do more of what you are doing in terms of monitoring our work, you need to be exposed to what you are doing. For instance, only recently, the minister held a function in which he was giving out awards or certificates to a number of our inmates who performed even much better in terms of the percentage of those who passed matric than the rest of the schools. Of course, our numbers are less than those of other schools outside of our standards, and also they are a confined people who are not in a position to be distracted by other things when they are. But there's a lot of good work that is happening that shows that in spite of these difficulties, the department, Mr. Chairperson, is functional. Thank you very much once again for giving us this opportunity, listening to us and guiding us and telling us what you expect of us. Where you are failing short, we take that in the spirit in which it is given.
Thank you very much, DM. And I can see, I think the members have exhausted their inputs. Don't necessarily have any follow-ups, so I think we are now about to just wrap up the meeting. I hope when I say that, I represent all of you members. Just before I do a brief summary, I think let's thank the members for their engagement, for you to come and in your way raise the pointed issues, because we do this as part of our the oath that we have taken to ensure that we play our role, but also to thank the Deputy Minister, the Commissioner and your team for preparing this presentation and today presenting them and responding to questions. But maybe just a few things as we go forward. Firstly, I hope that your team, DM and National Commission, have noted the kind of issues that we have highlighted that are going to need to be attended. On our part as the committee with our secretariat, the key thing that we're going to do, we're going to, in our next session of the subcommittee, because we've got an attitude about these items that we've prioritized, we are going to formulate what sense we're making out of this, and we'll relay that with you in terms of the resolutions of this meeting and the key issues that we think need to be done. And I think on your part, you need to do the same, because at some point I wanted to ask the question if you need assistance. I miss asking that question. Do you need assistance? I didn't ask that question. But I think in your response to questions, that is appreciated. I just wanted to raise one or two things as we close. The HR executive member did raise this on page 19, just as an example of how things happen. Because in that slide, one of the challenges that you have highlighted is the non-availability of panel members to conduct shortlisting and interviews. And due to other official and personnel commitments such as study leave. Now, I'm raising that, I'm highlighting that because that I consider to be a justification that I don't want to entertain. And I'll give you an example. As a member of parliament, I'm part of the magistrate commission. I have just concluded and spent since August 2020, not during COVID, August 2020, and 2 weeks ago, I spent 60 days and nights away from home. And what we're doing as the Magistrate Commission physically was shortlisting and interviews. We interviewed during COVID 2020 and 2021 over 481 applicants, 481 applicants. And we have settled to close vacancies of 172 magistrates. The reason you do that is that COVID or no COVID, the magistrates are needed. Every day, a court has work to do. 172 that we have recommended for appointment. In your SMS thing, the entire list you have is 56. You are not able to deal with this 56, and yet you've got another government institution that has just done that work, called people to interviews, did the shortlisting, called them to interviews. Every panel member had to be there. So reasons such as there can't be a shortlisting, there can't be an interview because designated panel members are not available. What's about study leave? And I'm raising this DM because this issue before COVID was brought to us. We discussed it at length to say interviews, shortlisting, everything else relating to those appointments are delayed because either people others were doing it, were told deliberately. They would absent themselves from a meeting, but they would want a certain candidate not to be appointed and so on, or an interview not to take place. That was well before COVID. And so you can't not do the work because somebody's on study leave. A different approach is going to be needed that complies with the times that we live in. Because correctional services in the same way like a court is needed with COVID or no COVID, it operates, does not come to a standstill. You've got to begin to develop an approach of remove and replace so that the work of this country cannot be held to ransom by factions in a particular section or people who don't like certain things. I thought I must just give you that example about the work that other people in the country are doing, so you're not unique, that things will come to a standstill because I read that and I was like, this reasoning should not even be written down here because it requires leadership. With that, colleagues, as I indicated, that as a committee, we're going to meet and draft a report out of this because the attitude we want to develop is that we don't want to continue sharing these presentations. We want to come back to you and say, based on the discussion we had with you, this is our sense, this is what we think you should be able to attend to. So I thank you very much, DM, National Commissioner, colleagues of the subcommittee, and all everybody else who was here. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
I wanted that answer. You need to say that. You need help, Commissioner. You need assistance. Because you're stuck. Thank you. You're whispering it.
Thank you, Chair.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, no, we do, Chair. Thank you.
All right.